This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Uhiben. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
Kenya is giving serious thought to withdrawing from the International Criminal Court. During a public address Monday for Kenya's Independence Day celebrations, the country's president gave the clearest sign yet it may be headed out of the ICC.
That's Rael Ombor reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up.
Also, after meeting with President Yahya Jammeh today, West African leaders are about to address the media on whether he will accept the results of the presidential election.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, West African leaders are scheduled to address the media soon in The Gambia after meeting with President Yahya Jammeh. The presidents of Liberia, Nigeria, Ghana, Sierra Leone, and Chad arrived in The Gambia today to tell Mr. Jammeh he must accept the results of the December 1st presidential election and step down. However, Jammeh has promised to challenge the results in the Supreme Court after initially accepting defeat at the hands of challenger Adama Barrow. Barrow has condemned Jammeh's refusal to accept the election results, saying Jammeh has no authority to either call for a new vote or declare the election null and void. The Associated Press reports Gambian security forces blocked access today to the office of the Electoral Commission. Soldiers are also patrolling the streets amid concerns about violence. Jammeh's term officially expires in January. He had ruled the Gambia for 22 years after taking power in a coup.
Kenya is giving serious thought to withdrawing from the International Criminal Court, ICC. During a public address yesterday for Kenya's Independence Day celebrations, the country's president gave the clearest sign yet it may be headed out of the ICC. Rael Ombor reports from Nairobi.
A Kenyan withdrawal from the ICC is becoming a real possibility. President Uhuru Kenyatta said the government will consider two motions passed by parliament for Kenya's withdrawal from the court. He said his decision was influenced by the failure of the ICC to reform in order to respect the nation's sovereignty of member countries.
Our choices are the basis of how we will steer our country to its destiny as a sovereign state. Our founders fought bravely to have the right to make choices free of external influence. Today, the world is full of wars, driven by the desire of some to explore the resources of independent nations.
Kenyatta said the ICC showed a lack of impartiality when it dealt with Kenya, and other African nations have recognized the same thing. He said Kenya has been a champion of global institutions grounded in fairness and respect for national sovereignty as part of its pursuit of a more stable and just world.
The Kenyan cases at the International Criminal Court have ended, but the experience has given us cause to observe that this institution has become a tool of global power politics and not the justice it was built to dispense.
Kenya is not the first African country seeking withdrawal from the ICC. In October, President Pierre Nkurunziza signed legislation calling for Burundi's withdrawal from the ICC. Burundi's government says the court is an instrument of powerful countries used to punish leaders who do not comply with the West. Gambia made a similar announcement under long-serving President Yahya Jammeh, who was defeated in recent elections by Adama Barrow, who strongly campaigned on remaining in the ICC. South Africa also pulled out, saying its obligations were in conflict and inconsistent with its diplomatic immunity legislation. Kenyatta has in the past been among the most vocal voices calling for African states to stage a mass withdrawal from the ICC. Although there's an argument the court has disproportionately focused on African countries, the court has also been increasingly scrutinizing the conduct of Western powers. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
And it's Italian court ruled today that the captain of a migrant boat that sank in April 2015, killing as many as 900 people, was responsible for one of the worst disasters on the Mediterranean Sea. Judges in Catania found Mohamed Ali Malik, a Tunisian national, guilty of manslaughter, human trafficking, and causing the tragedy. He was sentenced to 18 years in prison. His first mate, a Syrian national, Mahmoud Bikit, received a five-year sentence. Reporter Josephine McKenna is in Rome with more details and reaction to the court verdict.
Mohamed Ali Malik, a Tunisian national, was at the helm of the overcrowded vessel that was believed to have carried up to 800 or 900 refugees that sank between Libya and Italy in April 2015. Judges in Sicily sentenced him to 18 years in prison after being found guilty of manslaughter, human trafficking, and causing the disaster. They also fined him 9 million euros, which is around $9.5 million. Now, a second man, Mahmoud Bikit, a Syrian man accused of being his first mate, was handed a five-year sentence for facilitating illegal immigration, and he was also fined the same amount. So a big decision from Italy today, and one that's certain to send a strong message to people smugglers still packing those boats full of migrants as they make their way across the Mediterranean.
What has been reaction so far to this sentencing?
Well, it's a little bit early for any reaction, but we're expecting a huge reaction from the survivors themselves. A 32-year-old Bangladeshi man, the first survivor to arrive in Sicily at the time of the tragedy, was able to help identify these two men, who, by the way, claimed that they had been simple migrants and had been ordered to steer the boat by the real traffickers. But survivors told investigators that the captain really was the Tunisian, and it was his lack of sailing skills that had caused this terrible, deadly collision.
That's a very interesting aspect to this story. So what do you think the message will be that is going to go out to others who are involved in trafficking or in the movement and smuggling of people?
Well, this is going to send a very strong message to people smugglers. As we know, the traffickers, the top of the organizations, seem to be outside Italy and are far from the reach of police and investigators. But we've seen a trend recently where some of the migrants themselves are being forced to take over the boat. But this particular decision is going to really send a message that there are heavy penalties, you can't get away with this, and to perhaps think again before you cram those boats full of migrants and cause another tragedy like this.
And looking at the Italian law there, as far as the penalty of 18 years, will the person, Mohamed Ali Malik, will he be serving the whole 18 years?
Well, it's not clear yet whether he will look to appeal this decision. In Italy, you can appeal up to three levels before you actually serve the sentence. This seems unlikely in this case, and it's unclear whether he will serve the full term, but it's certainly a very heavy penalty for someone who was carrying a boat that was overladen with migrants who came from countries as diverse as Gambia, Senegal, Mali, and Ethiopia. So an incredible tragedy and really a very stern sentence, sending a strong message to people smugglers and traffickers across the Mediterranean.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 14 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. After meeting with Gambian President Yahya Jammeh today, West African leaders are about to address the media on whether he will accept the results of the presidential election. And Kenya is giving serious thought to withdrawing from the International Criminal Court. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Z Zimbabwe held its first ever public interviews for the vacant post of Chief Justice yesterday. The move reflects President Robert Mugabe's reduced authority under a constitution adopted 3 years ago. Mr. Mugabe used to appoint the head of the judiciary. A Judicial Services Commission of senior judges and lawyers now chooses three nominees, and Mr. Mugabe makes the final selection.
In its latest annual report, the World Health Organization says strong progress has been made in the fight against malaria, particularly in offering effective control programs to children and pregnant women in Africa. The organization, however, warns funding has plateaued, putting targets for tackling the disease at risk. Henry Ridgewell reports.
The World Health Organization's 2016 report highlights significant achievements in the global fight against malaria. Mortality rates, the annual number of deaths from malaria, have been halved in the past 16 years to just over 400,000. Programs to distribute insecticide-treated mosquito nets are the cornerstone of malaria prevention efforts in Africa, says Dr. Joe Lines of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
The progress is that now 53%, just over half that target population, and it's a very large target population in some very difficult to reach places, 53% of those people report now sleeping under an insecticide treated net. That's fantastic.
As more insecticide is used to prevent malaria, however, the mosquitoes, the vectors that transmit the disease, are becoming resistant.
Insecticide resistance is spreading very rapidly. Now that we're achieving those high levels of coverage, it's spreading more rapidly than ever and becoming really strong in some places. So there are places in Africa now that report their mosquitoes can stand 1,000 times the dose of the original population.
Diagnostic testing for malaria has also increased sharply in the last 5 years, allowing for the rapid prescription of life-saving treatment, particularly for children. Again, Dr. Lines.
What's clear now is that we need to do much more differentiated set of interventions. We need to tailor what we're doing to each place.
By far, the highest share of the global malaria burden is borne by sub-Saharan Africa, where 92% of malaria deaths occurred in 2015. Dr. Pedro Alonso Fernandez, the director of WHO's Global Malaria Programme, says progress is being hampered by a lack of funds.
The last 5 years, we have seen no increase on the level of funding, be this from international donors or domestic funding from the affected countries themselves. We are not on track to achieve our goals unless we increase the amount of resources made available to the fight against malaria.
The WHO says more needs to be done to prevent and treat malaria infection in children. Children under the age of 5 account for an estimated 70% of all malaria deaths. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
We hear a lot about how elephants and rhinos could become extinct due to poaching and habitat loss, but the stately giraffe is also at risk for the same reasons. The warning comes in a report from the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. To learn more, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Giraffe Conservation Foundation Director Julian Fennessy. Fennessy has studied the giraffe for over 20 years and lives in Namibia.
Giraffe is one of the most amazing animals in the world. It's the tallest land mammal currently. Long legs, long neck, and the most amazing spots and beautiful eyelashes.
And what's the personality profile of your generic everyday giraffe?
Giraffes are often perceived as these gentle giants, and whilst when you're looking at them, they sort of lumber across sort of the African landscape, you know, sort of minding their own business. But when the boys come together, they can fight and fight to the death, competing for females and for the right to be able to breed. But in general, they sort of, you know, move in small to large groups. They're happy. They don't interfere with other animals. And often what they need to do is run away from anything more often than not, with lions and leopards and other animals that are trying to eat them.
But the study showed a dangerous decline in the African giraffe population. Tell us more about the trend.
About 100 to 200 years ago, we probably estimate about 1 million giraffes across Africa. Come forward to 30 years ago, we estimated 150,000-odd giraffe, and now less than 100,000 giraffe in Africa, with more than 50% of those in South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, and Zimbabwe.
But why this dramatic decline?
Sadly, giraffe numbers have declined mostly as a result of people, because people have grown in numbers, they've expanded for agriculture, for development, and as such, land where giraffe and other animals live has been lost. Habitat loss is a huge problem because there's just not enough area for animals to move. Giraffe in some areas move more than 11,000 square kilometers. They need a large landscape to move over. So as a result, when there's habitat is lost, giraffe do not have the ability to be able to then mate properly. Numbers are reduced because there's less food for them to eat. And then to a lesser extent, but more so in eastern Central Africa, giraffe have been poached for their meat.
Why?
People in eastern Central Africa have been hunting giraffe illegally, mostly because of civil war and unrest. They just don't have anything to feed on. They have no crops left, so they've been chased out of their areas by the Lord's Resistance Army and others. So they've been a valuable protein source for people on the ground.
It's a very sad story you're telling.
But I think by understanding that giraffe are in decline, we have a greater ability to be able to talk with governments and set up national strategies, action plans, and start to take action. Input sort of practices like anti-poaching patrol to help save them.
Is that an ethical dilemma? Saving giraffes while the people who need the giraffe for food starve?
We obviously don't want people to suffer, but at the same time, giraffes do a lot for the landscapes. Ecologically, they're really valuable as landscape changers, they're pollinators, and culturally to many people in Africa, giraffes are really important. And we need just to weigh up all of those factors to make sure that we can save them, but at the same time, also not at the expense of people. I think it's really sad times indeed that we're seeing not just giraffe, but all these animals sort of going more and more threatened in Africa.
But not all the news about giraffes in Africa is dire, isn't that so?
Giraffe decline has been, you know, massive across the continent, there's no doubt. But throughout southern Africa, there has been a large increase, and with more than 50% of the continent's population, I don't think we're going to have a risk of extinction. However, in certain countries throughout eastern Central Africa, we have a real issue. The Democratic Republic of Congo in the Garamba National Park, it's home to the last 35 giraffe in the country. So if we don't do something now to try and save them, that could be the eighth country in Africa where giraffe have recently gone extinct. So together, I really call everyone out there that we can come together and make a difference before it's too late and join us in trying to save them.
That was Julian Fennessy, director of the Giraffe Conservation Foundation. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips from Windhoek, Namibia.
Mozambique's parliament meets next month about a big financial problem. Members have to decide what to do about nearly $1.5 billion in undisclosed loans. The debt could further weaken Mozambique's shaky economy and hurt average citizens. VOA's Anita Powell has more on the story.
Mozambique's economy appears to be in crisis as the nation prepares to default on massive loans taken out without Parliament's knowledge or approval during the past presidential administration. It is a striking setback for a nation once hailed for its promising natural gas deposits and peaceful recent elections. Now, with $1.4 billion in loans hanging over the government's head, money it simply cannot afford to pay back when the loans come due in coming months, the situation has taken a turn for the worse. A new report by the World Bank predicts the debt scandal has halved economic growth in 2016. The bank also projected a 17% drop in foreign investment and a currency slide of about 42% against the dollar. The head of the Africa program at London's Chatham House Research Group, Alex Vines, says this crisis is not limited to the world of accountants and policymakers. It will directly affect ordinary Mozambicans.
You know, this spike like this, which is worse than in the past, in previous times, has resulted in urban unrest. This has to be a worry now, I think, for Mozambique over the next 3-4 months, because it's tough for Mozambicans, and the government is unable to pay for things and is having to cut back.
Martin Davis, the managing director of Emerging Markets and Africa at consulting firm Deloitte, estimates this crisis could set Mozambique back economically by as much as a decade. And he says Mozambique's poor financial decisions are not unique.
Now, Mozambique's an extreme case, but there are other cases in the region, nowhere near as bad, I might add, where you have governments issuing eurobonds for developmental purposes, infrastructure building purposes and the like, but then proceeding to spend those monies on things that are, you know, that had nothing to do with the original mandate of a bond issuance. We see, not to the same extent as mentioned, but we see similar governance lapses and spending of those monies in Kenya as well, amongst other places, but Mozambique is particularly bad.
Mozambique's parliament has held a commission of inquiry into the situation, which led the former president, Armando Guebuza, to say of the loans that we would do just the same again in the defense of our beloved homeland and the wonderful Mozambican people. Meanwhile, risk consulting firm Kroll and other corporations are conducting investigations. They're expected to wrap up in February. Davis says Mozambique's parliament has one viable option to get out of the crisis, but that they will not like it.
Privatization, I'm afraid, is the only way to bring in decent and still decent governance in many of these state enterprises. And that's the case in Mozambique. So that's what's going to take place. I think the story of Mozambique in the next year, 2 years, will be the privatization story. The question is really what investors have the appetite to invest in these organizations.
This is one of the many difficult questions facing Mozambique's leaders in Maputo as the new year dawns over the Southern African nation. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwuhibe in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa. This is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best. Yes, sir. Two Face.
NATO C. Hey. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa. VOA.
Hello. I'm Douglas Simpuga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.